You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Royal Blue Podcast, where we've just got the small matter of an FA Cup quarterfinal to be building up to this weekend. Everton are welcoming Manchester City to Goodison Park. Pep Guardiola's side are in quite a decent run of form, you'd have to say, but it's a one-off game, and Carlo Ancelotti is seeming a little bit confident heading into this game. I'm your host, Adam Jones, and today joined by dream team of Dave Prentice and Gav Buckland, ready to spread the positivity, I think, ahead of this game. This is what we want today.
Wow.
A nice little positive pop. Preno's giving me a face already, but this is what we want. Right, we will start with you, Preno. And unfortunately, we do have to start off on a bit of a negative note. Carlo Ancelotti in his press conference confirms that Robin Olsen will be out of this weekend's game, which is leaving João Virginia as the man in goal, because, of course, Jordan Pickford is also out injured. Carlo doesn't seem concerned about having Virginia in goal. How do you feel about the whole situation?
Well, I wish I could put on as brave a face as Carlo does, but that's why he's an elite-level manager and a master motivator, because he did look completely unruffled, didn't he, and completely laid back about the situation. Maybe it's like the swan serenely gliding across the surface, whereas underneath, his flippers are going like, because it's a massive, massive blow. I mean, losing Jordan Pickford, as I spoke about in the last podcast, the man who's in form at the moment anyway, and capable of making the really blinding saves that save you results and save you matches. And then Robin Olsen was very, very different, but he was like more of a calming, reassuring presence, and he's very experienced. And then you're tossing in an unknown quantity into the equation. I mean, you've seen plenty of under-23 football, Adam, so you know what a good shot-stopper João Virginia is. But, you know, you're playing elite-level football, the best team in the country by a country mile, who are going to make sure that you are pulled out of position and you're overworked. And you're effectively making, you know, it's not his full debut. I know he's made, Carabao Cup appearances as well. But, you know, it's his, let's just say his full debut against Premier League opposition. It's going to be a real test for him. And, you know, as if that wasn't bad enough, James Rodriguez also not quite fit enough to play. So major obstacles and, you know, to overcome thrown in Carlo's path. But he sounded laid back enough about it. He sounded bullish enough. It's the old cliche, 11 men against 11 men on the day. But there's so much that goes against Everton in this one. Apart from lacking the goalkeeper, no atmosphere either, no fans in there. And that can make a massive difference in a cup tie. As we saw at this stage, 5 years ago, was it? Or maybe even less, when Chelsea came in the quarterfinals and an absolutely rocking atmosphere, you know, still contributed to Everton winning that one. That won't be there on this occasion. So, yes, all the odds are stacked against Everton. So, no, I'm not as confident or as bullish as Carlo. We'll just have to wait and see. Keep your fingers and toes crossed. You know, get all your lucky charms out and get your lucky undies on and everything, you know, just get everything you possibly can to try and influence the outcome of the game.
I mean, Gav, we got a bit of a look at João Virginia when he came off the bench against Burnley. Kept a clean sheet. He wasn't tested all that many times, I would have to say, by Burnley. I think the game was already kind of gone by that point. But did you see enough from his performance on that day to, you know, calm any sort of nerves that you might have had over Virginia going into this one?
I don't think it was enough, really. Yeah. Was it half? About 50 minutes. Not really enough. And as you say, like under-23 football, different demands, isn't it? Different environment. So it's definitely unknown. I was just thinking like Preno doing the old duck kicking there, you know. Do you reckon Carlo does that, or is he just serene? You know, like maybe he's not even kicking below the surface. It may just be like that permanently. I was just thinking, it only struck me when just talking about it. It was when we beat City in 2013. Was that when Yamu made his debut?
I was going to say, does he need to, does he need to try and get it of Yamaha?
This game, or maybe his first game, listen, we were well, obviously City the champions. And it was when he said that, and he said, like, no crowd there. And if I remember that day, the crowds really got behind. And I think that would be a key tomorrow for people, wouldn't it? You know, having the crowd giving you a bit of confidence, all that type of stuff. And I think I'm just thinking aloud here whether having to work against them a little bit, not having a crowd. Doesn't help. I remember that Mooka debut, or everybody's behind him and supporting him, and it worked really well. Nice tomorrow for the crowd, the gym, wouldn't it? Really, surely.
Well, I mean, Preno, we've talked, you know, in the past with Everton's goalkeeper situation about, you know, how the goalkeeper can affect the defenders in front of them as well. You know, having a confident goalkeeper means having confident defenders in that back line as well. How much do you think, you know, having a solid defence in front of Virginia is going to be able to try and help him through this match?
It's going to be absolutely vital in this one. I mean, communication is such a big issue between defenders and goalkeeper, even more so nowadays, given how much goalkeepers are expected to do with their feet. And just given his inexperience and his youthfulness, he's going to need defenders in front of him. A, who can protect him, but B, you know, sort of talk him through it. It's going to be a test, and I don't know much about it. And I'm a little bit concerned in some respects that the back four that we have at the moment doesn't appear to be the most vocal and the most, you know, so obviously communicative. That's if Seamus Coleman's not involved. I mean, if you go for the back four that Everton played when we played Manchester City last time, which defended quite well, to be fair, you know, so and did okay. Just City had an exceptional day. We made one or two silly errors, but we had Holgate, Keane, Mina, and Godfrey, I think, playing left back that day. And they all protected, you know, so Pickford reasonably well, you know, and got through the game okay. But if we go with something similar again, they're going to have to work in tandem with Jarre Virginia. I'm going to have to help him through because it's two ways of looking at it. I mean, you know, the lad himself might think about, wow, this is such a challenge for me. This is my opportunity to prove what I'm capable of. And, you know, he might have one of those absolutely inspired days. You just don't know. I mean, goalkeepers are such a rare breed. I'm trying to think of occasions when maybe something like this has happened, but we don't know how good he could become. Chris Woods, was it when he came on for Nottingham Forest in a League Cup final, you know, so and no one knew anything about him. And he had an absolute blinder and then went on to have this wonderful career. Maybe Jarre Virginia will be that type of player that, you know, he's a young goalkeeper with a great career ahead of him. And this is moments to actually, you know, sort of advertise those qualities to the world. I'm desperately hoping it and crossing my fingers while I'm saying this because we don't know. That's an ideal scenario. But for that to happen, he's got to be helped. Yeah, 100%. He's got to have the defenders basically pushing him in the right direction and, you know, sort of advising him. It's got to be a collaborative, you know, sort of teamwork contribution. Will it be? Well, we'll soon find out.
Well, I mean, just picking up on that point, Gav, I mean, obviously, you maybe expect Man City to make a few changes for this game, but they're still going to have a ridiculously strong side. They're going to put a lot of pressure on the defence and on the goalkeeper as well. Does this maybe represent a little bit of a free shot for Virginia, you know, put up against, you know, the toughest side in the country? Just go out and see what you can do.
Yeah, totally agree with you there, Ad. Same thinking, and in some respects, there's more of a risk playing them against the Burnley, isn't there? Or a team of that ilk. Against City, it's not going to affect the team as much, I think. If we lose, it's not going to be because of the keeper, is it? I think City, you've just got to play well as a team and have great shape as a team. So, yeah, it is a bit of a free hit. But a funny feeling, Preno was talking about that when Southall debut, didn't he? That was the last job, I think. Mind you, Espen Bardsson was the last minute job as well, wasn't it? Preno at Spurs that time.
We don't want to revisit that one again.
So let's hope he's more Southall than Bardsson. I get that completely. As I think you're right, it is a bit of a free hit for him. You know, if the worst comes to the worst, it's probably not going to be about him. It's going to be because the team hasn't played well in a tighter match where he's more like could be more likely to influence the game. But I think I've got, put it this way, I've got more worries about tomorrow than the goalkeeper.
I don't think, what are those worries then?
Yeah, well, City are playing really well, aren't they? You know, you just mentioned they could put a second team tomorrow out City, couldn't they? Mm. And they, you know, they're still probably better than us. You know, they've got the spending power is far greater, and Guardiola is obviously a top coach. And so, within that context, us having that third choice keeper out is not really that big a deal. They're on a good run, City, David Hughes' piece was quite good in the Echo today, wasn't it? I thought quite positive. In comparing how Man United played against City, that the worst thing you can do against City is just sit back and sit in defence, because obviously you just at some point they're going to breach it, aren't they? Is actually to press them higher up the pitch and work hard higher up the pitch and force them into mistakes. I know City, United have got more firepower up front, perhaps. And maybe more pace, maybe not, throughout the team. But I don't think tomorrow, what scares me is we'll just sit back for 90 minutes and just play. We get penalty shootouts or something. There's at some point they're going to score, are they? I think we've got to work hard further up the pitch tomorrow and press them, make it difficult for them. Because people are saying, oh, yeah, they're the best team ever that we've seen in the Premier League. Can't say that in this season. And I do get the impression, as David said in his article, that some teams have been against City before they've gone on the pitch. Mm. So we've got to have the right mental setup as well. Mm. So although they scare me because of their records and because of the players that they've got, we can get something out of it tomorrow, I think, if we apply ourselves and work hard.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
I'll expand on that a little bit, Preno. Do you think that Everton do have the capabilities to play like that? Because, strong home results that we've seen, I'm thinking, against Chelsea and Arsenal in particular, it was very much a sit back, soak up the pressure and then hit them on the counter sort of thing. You know, as Dave's piece suggested today, that's maybe not the best way to go about things against Man City. As Gav's quite rightly mentioned, it's about pressing them high up the pitch.
I think we need to try and find a repeat of the performance that we produced in the league game a month or so ago. I know that sounds a little bit strange because we ended up losing that game 3-1, but I still think that there were lots of positives in that match. And, it was unfortunate in that, whilst we were doing well, City scored an absolute wonder goal, so the kind of goal that, so probably they will only score at the moment, so once every month or so, but, so they are such an exceptional team. And we made just a couple of, silly, minor errors in that game. And you need to be as near perfect as you can be to get a result against Manchester City and also hope that they're not quite on the game as much as they were that night. And, well though they're playing, they're not going to repeat that performance every single time. They've become quite close to it at the moment, but they have been beaten recently, so we need to find a way of doing that. And it's going to be difficult, obviously, with the other players that we have missing. But it's not an absolute, foregone conclusion. No. There could be a possibility of us, doing something on the night and, pulling off the shock results. But we've got to be as near perfect as we can. And we've got to, everybody's got to be absolutely as close to perfection as they can be. I mean, the game at Chelsea, for argument's sake, it looks like an absolutely comfortable defeat. But the Richarlison miss when we were 1-0 down, when he had a half-decent opportunity. We've got to be taking opportunities like that when they're presented. And likewise, the Manchester City, the first game, so we had an opportunity before Richarlison scored, so that we didn't take. And so, we've got to absolutely be ruthless and take the opportunities when they are presented. Because we will create one or two moments. We've got to make sure we take them. And then equally, got to defend absolutely immaculately throughout. And that's asking an awful lot. But, if we can do that, we can get a result. You know, so it's not beyond the realms of possibility. You look at the bookies' odds, and yes, you know, City are massively odds on, and they're odds on for a reason because they're a great side. But these, you know, things do occasionally get, you know, these cup upsets, you know, so these results do occasionally get thrown up. And you know, we just got to hope this can be one of them.
Mm. And I think the important point to note, Gav, about that previous game against Man City is that Dominic Calvert-Lewin didn't play, Alan didn't play, Yeni Mina got taken off after 18 minutes as well.
Yeah.
All three of them, you're expecting to be back for Everton tomorrow. How important can all of them be?
Going from the first, I think Mina gives us options at the back, doesn't it? If he comes in, would you therefore play Coffrey at right back?
Potentially, yeah.
So not only Mina coming back, but enables us to... The right back position has been problematical for us for most of the season, hasn't it? In terms of, you know, I know Seamus has played and Holgate, but I think Godfrey's mobility and physical presence would be welcomed. So Mina, definitely. Alan needs to be fit, doesn't he? You know, needs to be fit and fired. And it'd be interesting to see what system Carlo plays tomorrow. So, yeah, absolutely. And DCL is, well, he's our main goal scorer, isn't he? And you want him playing. It's snapping up those chances that Pleno was talking about. So, all things considered, all three will be welcome compared to the league game. Yeah, and you're right. I mean, was it 1-1 with about 15 minutes left in the league game, something like that?
Maybe 20 or so minutes left. Yeah,
20 minutes, which was to say, yeah. I think it was the year before, wasn't it? 1-1 with 15 minutes left. I think when Mahrez scored, it was the free kick. I'll tell you what, I'll take 1-1 with 15 minutes left tomorrow.
Yeah,
definitely. Though we lost 3-1, I think the last two league games, that's not necessarily a reflection. I know City probably, you know, boxed both matches, but in some respects, not necessarily a true reflection of the balance of the game. So yeah, stay in the game and take it from there, really. I mean, City got this great record domestically under Pep, haven't they? I was just having a look before. I think they played 47 domestic cup ties under Guardiola, only lost 5. So, you know, and one of them was the second leg of the League Cup game where they went through an aggregate.
Yeah.
But the law of averages would dictate you can't be successful all the time in domestic cup games. So hopefully tomorrow it'll end, but Pleno spot on. Everybody has to be 100% tomorrow, as does the manager, as does the substitutes.
Mm.
You know, because there's 5 substitutes, is it?
I've lost count.
It's also, dare I say, favour City. So there's some options there. But yeah, we can win, but you know, go through. But I'll tell you what, we need to work hard for it and make sure everybody's got their day game out.
Yeah. We were talking about the high-pressing game earlier, Preno, and, you know, obviously the return of Dominic Calvert-Lewin is going to be important for that. But how about Gylfi Sigurdsson as well? Do you think that his return could be important in that sense as well?
I don't know, really. I mean, I thought he played very well. He played in the last league game against City and, you know, did well. And, you know, so Carlo does like him. But you might not have seen this email yet, Adam, but you were asking for, you know, likely Everton lineups tomorrow. Which we do
have
for
you,
our
have
team.
Have you not put Sigurdsson in?
And I was trying to basically formulate a team that would basically stink the gaff out and, you know, go for a 0-0 draw and win on penalties. I think the phrase was, you know, how do you stop an irresistible force? You're placing a movable object in its path. And, you know, the back four that we played that night, vying with Luca Dean a little bit further forward. And I'm thinking, well, the midfield too, you know, so Tom Davis, Alan, you know, they're robust enough and, you know, sort of mobile enough to hopefully try and close the space down. And then who'd you play on the right? And I thought, well, I didn't want to be too, you know, sort of open. And so, you know, I put Richarlison behind Dominic Calvert-Lewin, you know, so rather than Sigurdsson, just to be that little bit more resilient. I mean, you could have put Richarlison on the right and played Sigurdsson, you know, behind Calvert-Lewin. That's like a more ambitious approach. Maybe Carlo will go with that, but I didn't. I went for Seamus Coleman on the right with a way of trying to just be as like solid as possible. I know that looks like six defenders. Maybe we might need six defenders. I don't know. but no, in that lineup, that didn't have Gylfi Sigurdsson. And I felt bad for doing that because I'm a Gylfi Sigurdsson fan and he is playing well at the moment. So maybe it depends on how ambitious we're going to be on the day. Are we going to try and have a go at them? Are we going to try and, you know, sort of press them I'm not so sure we've got the players who can do that. City are so good at the back. I mean, they want you to do that. They want to suck you in, you know, so and they want to, you know, so play the ball out from the back. They've even got a goalkeeper who's as good as most, you know, midfield players with the ball at his feet. And so, you know, they are comfortable doing that. You know, are we capable of pressing them? I'm not so sure. I think the better option might be, like we did against Chelsea and Arsenal, as you say, in the first games at Goodison, sitting deeper, defending deeper, and trying to use our pace to hit teams on the break. And Richarlison and Calvert-Lewin have got pace, you know, so and we can do it with that. But, you know, that's my, you know, so back of a cigarette packet tactics. I'm sure Carlo will have something altogether much more considered and much more, you know, so tactically intellectual put together.
Mm. Well, speaking about Sigurdsson in particular, Pep Guardiola brought Sigurdsson up in his pre-match press conference, and he called him, the word he used was master in terms of set pieces, especially. Carlo Ancelotti was also, you know, highlighting the importance that set pieces could have for Everton, you know, especially with the likes of Yerry Mina and Dominic Calvert-Lewin in the side.
Yeah.
Gav, do you think that, you know, the necessity for us to have good set pieces kind of means that Sigurdsson needs to start?
Yeah. I don't know whether Gylfi and the high-pressing game go hand-in-hand, mine. to be fair. I get that. I'm a Gylfi fan. I think he gives us something a bit extra. I don't know if he said there's a few fans who don't like him. Seppi, needless to say, put at all times. Quite good. Have we got one of the highest in the Premier League set pieces or something like that?
I think it's, is it maybe just behind West Ham, is it? Something like that.
West Ham, yeah. So the other is a tough for us anyway. In City, to be, haven't they? Which might be reflected in my forecast at the end of the pod. I'll play Sigurdsson tomorrow. To be honest with you, I'm not like Preno. I'm not Coleman, right midfield. I'll play Sigurdsson.
I'll change my mind in half an hour's time. I mean, this is my pre-match.
Yeah.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
I haven't seen Pep's press conference. I'm just wondering what context did he say, master? Was it talking about Pep? Did you say was it free kick? I wonder how did that get brought up?
He was talking about set pieces. Yeah, I've got the exact quote here. He says, "A way you have to realise how they play, how we can find spaces to attack, control set pieces because they have a master with Sigurdsson as a taker and tough players like Keenan, Mina and Calvert-Lewin." So,
yeah,
he's clearly very wary of the damage that Everton can do in terms of set pieces.
Yeah, and that's right. I mean, so that's the one thing they'll be fearful of tomorrow morning, if City do fear. Interesting to see John Stones is playing well at the moment as well, isn't he? Scoring goals. I get it. I mean, I'd say I like City, don't get me wrong, and I sort of appreciate how good they are, but you know, we've got to remember this. We're playing artificial football at the moment. I don't think it's the time to judge how good the team is. And I think some teams are beaten before they play them. So I would definitely be positive about tomorrow. And I'm probably, you know, talking myself into this too much. But I can see getting a result tomorrow is not beyond the realms of possibility. I've got this theory that if you win a fifth round game 5-4 after extra time, or whatever it was, that you've got a good chance. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
you know what I mean. I was going to say name on the trophy, but I'm not going to say that. But we don't want to be intimidated by City's reputation. Stay in the game, be positive, press when we can, we take advantage of set pieces, and we make something out of it.
Well, I think that's what's interesting about Carlo Ancelotti's press conference, wasn't it, Preno? Because as you said at the start of the podcast here, you know, he seemed very, well, I wouldn't say bullish, but he was quite confident about, you know, his side's chances and their desire in the FA Cup. He was asked whether this is going to be his most important game, and he essentially said, yeah, it is for now, but I want to have more important games than this in the future, like the semi-final, the final, the game that might decide us getting into Europe as well. So, you know, it's really good to hear a manager talking like that, isn't it? You know, despite how good City are, you know, they're not unbeatable.
100%. I mean, you want to have that, you know, sort of confidence from your manager, even if it's misplaced. I can think of lots of examples in the past. I remember Howard Kendall when he was going through his really bad times at Everton, and talking to people about his demeanour, and he used to physically steel himself before he walked into Belfield because he'd feel the pressure like everybody did. But he'd walk in with a big cheery smile on his face, and he'd put everybody at ease and gave the impression that it wasn't a problem. You know, so everything's going fine. Just trust me. Walter Smith, to a lesser degree. I remember a game at Coventry City a long, long time ago when Peter Clark made his debut at right back. Phil Jevons played. I think Walter actually described it to me privately as it's an oh my godder, because we had so many players missing. But then he publicly, for the paper, basically said that, look, no worries at all. You know, so we've got a team that can go there and do this. I don't want to hear about all the players who are missing. I want to hear about the players who are available. I mean, we went down and won 3-1. And okay, this is Coventry City. It wasn't Manchester City, but they play in sky blue, so who knows? But no, it's a message from the manager. It's all about motivation. It's all about playing a part, basically, so being an actor and, so having people believe in the words that you're saying. And, Carlo Ancelotti will be saying that to his players, and you'll have them believe in it because he's Carlo Ancelotti, because he has masterminded, tactical master plans against the best teams in Europe, and actually got a result against teams like that. And so he will have found opportunities and ways in which Manchester City can be beaten, but as we said at the outset, for that to come to fruition, every single player will have to play to the top of their game. City will have to have one or two players on a ribbon off day. He will say that, and so he will make the players at his command believe that. So, yeah, it's good management, so it's very shrewd management. And I like the fact as well, he's not trying to, overstate the case. Yes, it is the most important game, he says, of his Everton career so far, but there could be more important ones to come. So, yeah, it's all very, very, very good management. And was it Jermaine Janus earlier this afternoon, the BBC pundit, was asked by somebody about the games this weekend and how he believed they could go. And whilst not actually saying he believed Everton would win, there was a very, very positive analysis of the game. And he said that Everton haven't achieved silverware for a long, long time, but they have got the man, who's capable of bringing, those trophies to Goodison. And he believed the biggest key to this game at the weekend is not the goalkeeper. It's not Abdoulaye Doucouré's absence. It's not Dominic Calvert-Lewin playing, but it's Carlo Ancelotti. So he's the man that can make the difference in this game. So, that's a guy who's played football, who's, a much better pundit than I am, suggesting that Carlo Ancelotti, could be the difference. So, let's hope that's the case.
Mm. And I suppose, Gav, another example of that is that Carlo Ancelotti could easily have come into his press conference today and been bemoaning the injuries that have plagued his side, James Rodriguez out, Doucouré out, now they're not going to have a senior goalkeeper either. But he was very quick to dismiss that. He was saying, I don't want to focus on the players that aren't going to be there. I want to focus on the players that are there. And that's another positive thing for fans to hear, isn't it, ahead of tomorrow?
Yeah, I can think of a few Everton managers in the past who would have definitely focused on the manager, the players being in. I was going to say, when Jermaine Janus was saying about Carlo affected tomorrow, he was not talking about putting his boots back on, is he, and getting out on the pitch. To be honest,
the injury crisis is quite that bad.
I just going off on the tangent completely. Sad. I remember, like you saying about the Howard's demeanour, and he was good for the quiff, wasn't he, when he was struggling. I remember the day before the infamous Coventry game on New Year's Eve, 1983, he said, that this is the worst injury crisis ref I've ever seen. Even Yogi, the club dog, is limping. I you mentioned it being a free hit for Virginia. I think it may be Carlo's relaxed. I mean, is also in some respect, it's a free hit for him as well, isn't it? Nobody's expecting us to win tomorrow. It's not, okay, it'd be great to get the semi final and stuff, but actually getting beat to City's not the, not necessarily season defining loss. So maybe he's a little bit relaxed on the surface because he knows there's a free hit, but perhaps underneath he fancies it. I think as much as I'd be there's things about Ancelotti's appointment that I said at the time, perhaps I didn't support. One thing is completely clear. He's a master of press conferences. They're all perfection, aren't they? You know, how to manage. I know it's slightly different at the moment because people aren't there and stuff, but all that experience and where we're sort of, and you know, knowledge and all that he's built over years as a player and a manager in some ways. Elements. They're always masterpieces, aren't they?
Yeah.
Very, you know, apart from Luke Garbus, I think everybody's a big fan of the press conferences, aren't they? Probably. Yeah, he never really puts a foot wrong, does he? And he said today exactly what I expected him to say. Look on the positives, blah, blah, blah. Big games on the horizon that we need to look forward to, not just this one. Yeah. Good management.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Preno, while we're on the subject of injuries, we saw the return of a quite mythical man to Finch Farm, as it's turned out. Jean-Philippe Gabamon has been pictured back at Finch Farm for, I think, the first time since May, which is quite incredible, really. But doing individual ball work, and Carlo Ancelotti seemed to suggest in his press conference that he could be, you know, returning to training with the team next week, and he could be in contention after the international break, which is, you know, it's promising for him, I suppose, isn't it?
Well, that is definitely what I gleaned from it. You know, I saw those pictures earlier today. I read your piece where, you know, he was back on the training pitch doing ball work, and he didn't look like he'd aged any. It was great. But no, I mean, sorry, I'm being flippant there. I mean, the lad has had an incredibly tough time. And Carlo was very upbeat about his inclusion. He'd be training with the lads next week, which suggests he's going to be in, you know, sort of regular contact, you know, in terms of tackling and stuff like that. And, you know, if he gets through all that well enough, we could be seeing him in the squads very soon. So that's great news. And I'm not going to go so far as to suggest that, you know, we've got the Abdoulaye Doucouré replacement, you know, sort of lined up for between now and the end of the season. But we have got possibly an opportunity to see him introduced, you know, bit by bit from the bench, maybe, you know, in the next month or so, which is great news, you know, because the lads had such a really tough, torturous time. And let's hope, fingers crossed, he can come through it all now and get back playing again. And we can see the kind of player that, you know, so we thought we had all those years ago, because, it's been so tough for him. So, yeah, whilst today's press conference wasn't particularly upbeat, there were one or two, you know, sort of rays of sunshine, and that was certainly one of them.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
I suppose, Gab, there's two sides to Gabamon's return, isn't there? Because, of course, you don't want to push him too hard and, you know, risk a recurrence of any sort of injury worries from now until the end of the season. But at the same time, we do kind of need to see how he's going to fit into the rest of this squad, don't we, before the summer transfer window, where, you know, if Gabamon's not going to fit into this squad, Everton kind of need to sign a player in that area, don't they?
Yeah, you know what, lads, I think if it wound on the clock back 12 months, I think we said exactly the same thing on the pod 12 months ago. That you need, you know, seriously, that he needed games at the end of the season to prove his fitness, because that would help determine our transfer strategy during the summer. And 12 months later, we are still in the same boat, aren't we? If he comes back in and he shows his fitness and that there's no long-term implications, then we can, you know, we can strengthen elsewhere. You know, so that's the best-case scenario. I'm not going to talk about the worst-case scenario. So it would be good to see him back for a number of years. He fills a hole because we've got Doucouré missing. Although he's not a like with Doucouré, is he? You know, he is a defensive midfielder, I believe. So that's good news. He's always sending on my Twitter every Everton press conference, Gabamon. But which is not necessarily a good thing, you know. He gets brought up every one of them. Yeah, be great to see him. I mean, I feel so. I mean, if you go to a foreign country and get injured, it's bad enough. Well, just being injured is bad enough. But in a foreign country when he just joined, it's bad enough before you had time to settle. And obviously, with what's going on, you know, since lockdown, it must be desperately challenging time. Not just with your injury, just generally life in general and your own personal morale and well-being must have taken an absolute battering. And I think we really understate that, you know, with him. It's not just a physical thing, is it? It's a mental. It's a mental challenge for him. And if he comes back, it'd be great to see him back. And what a great story that would be if he comes back before the end of the season. Hopefully he gets a couple of game time, you know. So because we've got to think of him as an individual within this, not just the team and the club.
Yeah. And I suppose in that sense, Preno, you know, has Gabamon got the best manager possible in Carlo Ancelotti to try and bring him back into the setup? Because, you know, Carlo's not going to be putting any undue pressure on him, is he? He's going to be very, very calm, and he's going to be, you know, very welcoming, I would say, of Gabamon's return.
Up to a point, I certainly thought there was like a hint behind what he said last week about wanting to see, you know, Gabamon in action very, very quickly. And to see what he can produce with a view to formulating his transfer plans, you know, for this summer. I'm sure he actually said, you know, however Gabamon fares, you know, will dictate what they need to do in the transfer market this summer. You know, do they need to bring somebody else in that position? Or is he a man that could, you know, save him, you know, sort of having to look in that area? So I think there will be pressure on him in that respect to see, you know, if he can perform at the level which convinced Everton, you know, to pay what they did for him, you know, however many years ago it was. So, yeah, it's not going to be, you know, a completely comfortable take your time, son, you know, so just ease yourself back in gently. If he's 100% fit, you know, he's going to be asked to perform very, very quickly. It's quite an unforgiving environment, Premier League football. And, you know, whilst we all feel, you know, so dreadfully, you know, for what the lads had to endure, he is fully fit now, you know, so he is over that injury, all the various injury problems. And he needs to show that he can perform sooner rather than later. So, yeah, Ancelotti will give the impression of being, you know, sort of positive and supportive, but he'll want to return as well. And, you know, Gabamon will have to deliver that pretty quickly, I think.
How do you reckon it would affect Gabamon coming back into an empty stadium, Gav? Because, you know, obviously he would have had huge amounts of fans behind him if he was going to be making his return in normal circumstances. But it's going to be a bit, you know, subdued, isn't it? Where if like, let's say he does return international break, it's not going to be an amazing environment to come back into, is it?
No, I mean, me and Preno playing good cop, bad cop here, I mean, it's me being all soft and gentle about Gabamon.
This is what we like.
And Preno saying, if he's not good enough, get it straight away. I mean,
that's football. No sense.
You know, now you know why Preno's risen so high, you know, with that ruthless streak that obviously I'm missing, you know. You know, now I get that about. It goes back to the old story, so we spoke about several times in lockdown, how empty stadiums affect people, you know. We've mentioned on this podcast with Virginia. It's interesting one, isn't it? I think you probably want to come back to empty stadium, perhaps. Maybe a little bit less pressure on you than, you know, fewer eyes on you might be better for you. We don't know what make people tick, do we, though? At the end of the day, we're second guessing there, aren't we? I know if I'd been off for 2 years, I'd want a gentle introduction in an empty, you know, in an empty ground. But, you know, some people might want the encouragement of a home crowd, you know. Yeah, so interesting, but I think it's a good news story. I mean, I thought we'd written off this season with him, but it appears to be a bit of light at the end of the tunnel, doesn't it?
Yeah. Nice. And on that fairly positive note,
you're not going to ask the predictions.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. And because you're moaning, Preno, you can go first.
I was getting told off on social media recently for the lack of realism and in our predictions. And I don't know what people want us to come on here and be, you know, sort of doom, gloom and despondent.
I mean, we shouldn't have been beaten by Burnley. I don't think Victor wins against Burnley was
I think it was the Chelsea one they were looking at. I think I actually managed to recklessly predict a victory at Chelsea, which was a bit silly, I suppose. I'm going to, as I often do in situations like this, go back towards, you know, sort of a bit of precedent. Bit of nostalgic precedent. And Gavin, I remember this very, very well. Way back in the late 70s, there was an outstanding football team that played beautiful, easy on the eye football called Ipswich Town. It came to Goodison Park and absolutely took us to the cleaners, battered us 4-0. Yeah. It was one of those days where the cushions came onto the pitch and everybody was absolutely distraught. And they were a great, great side, that Ipswich team. And Gordon Lee rather recklessly said, I want to play them again in the FA Cup. I want to get revenge. Everyone thought he was a lunatic. Anyway, we drew Ipswich Town in the quarterfinals only a month later. And he did have a tactical master plan. He played John Gidman in a free role to sit on Eric Gates, who was like one of the original number 10s. And we were inspired that day, finished ruthlessly, defended magnificently, and won 2-1. So there's the precedent. It can be done. So I'm going to maybe not quite be as reckless as that. I think we'll grind it out. We'll go take it to extra time. We'll get a draw, and we'll win on penalties. So there you go. Penalty shootout victory.
Wow. That's going to cause havoc for my print deadline. That I really hope that doesn't that doesn't happen. To be honest with you, Gav, what's your thoughts?
Sorry, that's what you're saying. You'd rather see City win tomorrow, so a 2-2 report. You mean is that what you're saying? You know?
No. You're putting words into your mouth.
I know what you mean. I know what you mean exactly. Now I think I've noticed actually, and this is an age thing. Whenever we're off against it, we've got to do predictions. That Ipswich game is actually brought up quite a few times. I know if you listen back to our podcasts as a means of like taking comfort from the past, you know. And after all that, it's honest God's truth. I was going to say exactly the same as Penno. I've just got a funny feeling about it with the cup this year. You know, after that Spurs game, I just mentioned it. I just got a funny feeling. I'll probably be completely wrong. Considering, I think last time I got a prediction, like there was actually outs in grounds, you know. So, I'm going to go with Penno. I was going to do my normal bottle job, 1-1 and us to win on penalties. And how about this? Wouldn't it be nice to see Jao Virginia there stop a couple of City penalties and the penalty shootout?
Well, you can say score a pen then.
you never. Well, I think he took. Didn't Robles drop? Did Robles miss at West Ham? Did he take one?
Smack one against the bar, yeah.
Yeah, so we have got a precedent. Well, he's wanted to take one, wouldn't he, really, to be fair. Now, seriously, I think in keeping with... I can only go back to what I said before. Be positive. Don't be afraid of City. Don't get beaten before you get out on the pitch. Work hard. Work 100%. And got a chance. So, but I think maybe winning normal time, perhaps a bit beyond us, but... an additional 120 minutes, 1-1 draw, followed by a win for the Mighty Blues.
Right. Okay. I think it's going to be a bit of a different game, to be honest. I think with this, with Carlo saying it's, you know, a knockout, it's a one-off game, I can see it being a little bit more open for some reason. Okay. I think I agree with you a little bit earlier in the pod when you said, if you're just going to sit back against this City team, they've got far too much quality that they're just going to break you down anyway. So just don't see how that's going to play out. So you might as well just go forward and attack them with you know, essentially everything you've got. So I think maybe... I'm going to have to go... I'm going to have to go with a win. But... 3-2. 3-2, I think.
Wow.
It's going to be a high. I think it's going to be quite a high scoring game.
So is that just to satisfy your print deadlines as well, Ad, is it? Yeah.
Yeah, 3-2 nice. In normal time as well.
The normal time, yeah. Best of both worlds.
Yeah, that'll be
nice little rewrite as we score a 90th minute winner, you know.
That'll be a welcome rewrite.
That'd be brilliant, I'd say
I'd take that fully on board. People might not be thinking they're the most realistic predictions, but you know, I think it goes along with the positive note that I wanted at the start of this podcast. I think we've bookended ourselves quite well, and you know what? It is a one-off game. It's the FA Cup, the magic of the cup, as Joe Rimmer hates it to be described. So let's just see how Everton go. Thank you very much, lads, for joining me, and thank you very much for listening. Don't forget, you can subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts from, and you can join in the conversation on Facebook and Twitter as well. Just search for the Royal Blue Podcast on there, and I'm sure you'll be able to find us with ease. You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.